Clarkson Weekly Review, Current Technology Analysis, show number 31, April 29th and 30th, 2006, wvtexan.podomatic.com. This week's intro music is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The artist is Sun Seals, the track, Landlord at My Door. In this week's show, we look at the changeable web and more of Web 2.0 forensics. The buzz is open source hotspots, a legal case involving peer-to-peer networks, and for the Because You Can site, America's favorite drug dealer. On to the show. The changeable web and Web 2.0 forensics. Here's a simple directive for forensic analysts in a Web 2.0 world. Get to know JavaScript. The user interface makeover that is sweeping the web and encouraging the type of interactivity and user-generated content discussed in this podcast is driven, for now anyway, by XML and JavaScript. Knowing how the code works is important in a way that programming languages may not previously have been so important in digital investigations. There's a clear difference between web applications that run in a browser and applications that run natively on a computer. The difference, as concerns the programming language, is that Web 2.0 applications are not compiled, and as such, forensic investigators and analysts will be faced with interpreting not only resultant data, but also the actual program in cases. When investigating files on a hard drive, an investigator need not be an expert in the language used to program the word processor that generated the files. With Web 2.0 data, however, the program code is inextricably linked with the data it generates. In most applications, such data is stored and manipulated as arrays within the program, data structures which are only rendered meaningful in the context of the program. So, to provide evidence interpreted from the data, an investigator needs to be able to show how the program code manipulates that data for a specific result. There is a distinction to be made here, though. I'm not talking about the semantic web, only the collection of user-focused tools commonly labeled Web 2.0. These tools include interactive interfaces, pages that collect data from XML without requiring a full page refresh, etc. The semantic web is a collection of data structures and formats toward an entirely different purpose. So the forensic analysis here is focused on deriving meaning from evidentiary data stored in the browser's cache or history files and manipulated by JavaScript from Web 2.0 applications. There is also a distinction to be made between security and forensics. Much of the research focused on the woes of Web 2.0 is centered on how to prevent dangerous cross-site scripting and escalated privileges. Forensics focuses on determining what happened based on the available evidence. Forensics is after the fact. The overlap in this discussion, however, comes from the fact that an investigator or analyst will need to know how the JavaScript manipulates the data stored on the hard drive, or must use the JavaScript code to prove where certain data originated. For web browsers, a new source of excitement and a potential criminal vector, is user scripting, or the ability to manipulate the way pages are displayed and data is retrieved for the local machine. Using Opera browser's built-in capability, Firefox and GreaseMonkey, or Internet Explorer and Reify Software's Turnabout, you can change the way you see and use the web. That was in part the information for this show's segment on the changeable web. That power and flexibility, however, requires that forensic investigators be able to read the JavaScript code and know where the data is stored and how the pages are manipulated. Otherwise, someone would be able to hide activity by obscuring data across multiple sites. Fortunately for the investigator, all user scripts are stored on the user's hard drive in plain text. JavaScripts are always stored that way. So the learning curve may not be incredibly steep. See the show notes for links to a comparison of Web 2.0 with the semantic web and sites discussing user scripts in further detail. The buzz is open source hotspots. There are several news stories this week about the development of an open wireless sharing platform for download from the internet. Called the PERM Project, Practical End-Host Collaborative Residential Multi-Homing Framework, the project offers to help users with their wireless connections to the world safely and securely. It also potentially offers the chance to violate the terms of service in your broadband connection contract. PERM is receiving press coverage now, but this framework has been under development for a while now due to the fact that many of the most popular home wireless routers use a version of the Linux operating system. The firmware inside the routers has been rewritten by and released as an open source distribution on the internet. Add on a connection manager, also available as a free download, and voila, you're a hotspot. There are many emerging networks competing for user take-up with a variety of strategies. Like any other hotspot network, the two driving factors to adoption present a chicken and egg situation. You need users to make a big network, but a small network won't attract users. One such company is Phone, pronounced F-O-N, spelled F-O-N, which recently received funding from Google and eBay's Skype to underwrite the distribution of specially configured routers that will allow anyone, anywhere, to set up a hotspot node in the network. If enough users take the company up on its offer, then users would be able to roam around the country sharing bandwidth for the price of providing bandwidth. This works well for me. I live in a very small town with low wireless penetration. I'm not certain that if I lived in a large city, I would want large groups of people outside my place on the sidewalk sucking up my connection. We'll see how it all pans out. The idea of a user-driven and user-provided network of hotspots is an idea that will take hold in light of potential increasingly be in the press in light of potential problems with terms of service violations and reaching critical mass. Some big money is lined up behind the idea, though, so there'll definitely be developments. See the show notes for links to the research project, Phone's homepage, and a news release discussing the original open source project behind all the fuss. This week's legal case involves two peer-to-peer decisions. And this week we're going to look at two similar cases, both decided in April of 2006, and both related to peer-to-peer file sharing networks and copyright infringement. In the wake of last summer's MGM v. Grokster decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, holders of copyright interest in the digital expression of creative intellectual property have had an easier task in pursuing relief in the courts against alleged infringers of those copyrights. The first case this week is Virgin Records of America v. John Doe's 1-35. The plaintiff in this case alleges that defendants are actively infringing on the plaintiff's copyright by offering songs for download through a peer-to-peer network. The case record under current consideration involves one of those defendants seeking to quash a subpoena to his internet service provider seeking his physical world identity. Investigations, such as the one leading to this case, usually proceed by the holders of copyright seeking a link between a computer user's IP address and a real-world identity. The link is often established by subpoenaing ISP records to make the connection. In this case, the defendant claims that the subpoena is invalid and that the case has been filed in the wrong jurisdiction. The court found, in a short opinion, that A, the subpoena could not be quashed on an anonymity claim since the subpoena sought to establish identity for the purpose of further proceedings. Such a finding, the court opined, would be counter to the very concept of the subpoena in question. And B, that because of the location of the ISP, the plaintiff had properly set the jurisdiction to the District of Columbia. More interesting here, though, is the court's finding that installing P2P software and connecting to a P2P network transforms a standalone computer, quote, into an interactive internet site, unquote, bound by all the laws and regulations inherent in that definition. In the second case, Interscope Records et al. V. Lindsay Duty, also a P2P copyright infringement case, the court found that the plaintiff's method of collecting evidence of the infringement was valid because once the defendant placed files into a publicly available shared folder on her hard drive, there was no barrier to entry or seclusion of the files. The second case also clearly establishes that copyright holders in these digital infringement cases have a commercial interest in both copying and distribution, making the act of placing files in the shared public folder an infringement on both counts. So the record companies in particular are getting much better at meeting defenses to peer-to-peer sharing copyright violation cases. It's this simple. It's illegal to copy songs from a CD and then offer them to others for free on the internet. See the show notes for a link to both published case findings. Because You Can Cite This Week is America's Favorite Drug Dealer. Some listeners will know that I like coffee, and when it comes to coffee in the U.S. these days, there's not much choice along the interstate highways. So I've become a big fan of Starbucks and am way too involved in the whole scene. For those looking for a little insight into what's going on behind the bar, check out the link in the show notes for Starbucks gossip. The entries and comments are written by baristas and those who frequent the stores. Check it quickly. This will only be fun for another year or so. By then, there'll simply be too many of the green stores for it to be fun anymore. Well, that's all for this week. Check back next week for another review. Remember, all the show notes are available at www.protopage.com/weeklyreview. And if you get a minute, leave a comment on the posting site. It'll be nice to hear from you. We'll go out now with Sun Seals from the PodSafe Music Network with Landlord at My Door.